was killed in a Sudanese area in the north of the Strip. Another was killed near Jabalia Nazla, and five Palestinians were killed in an assassination operation the Israeli occupation army carried out on the western parts of Gaza City. And that was the target of that attack was the commander Raed Saad, who was killed as a result of this attack. This actually highlights how the Israeli occupation army is still and is ongoing in its assassinations, is still actually searching and looking for catches here and there around the Gaza Strip in order to carry out more assassinations and in order to continue in these one-sided violations of the ceasefire agreement.
World Health Organization has issued a stark warning about the situation of the health sector in Gaza. And according to the World Body, 18 out of 36 hospitals and 43% of all primary health centers are only partially functioning. According to the WHO, there are no MRI machines left and only two CT scanners there to cover a population of over 2 million. It added there is a severe shortage of essential medicine and medical supplies needed to treat diseases, especially heart and kidney disease, as well as intensive care surgery. The organization said it's facing challenges for bringing laboratory material and critical lab machines into Gaza because the Israeli forces are preventing the entry of items by classifying them as dual use. WHO said that Gaza's humanitarian crisis is worsening amid severe flooding and storm. Thousands of civilians are sheltering in coastal areas with no drainage or protective barriers. Political analyst Robert Inlakesh joined us earlier. He said, backed by the U.S., Israel is pursuing a plan for a new Gaza, which includes forced displacement and long-term ethnic cleansing.
What we're seeing right now is that still essential items are restricted. There's flooding that, of course, has just affected over 100,000 tents in the Gaza Strip this past week. Of course, people are dying from all sorts of different ailments. Many are injured and are prevented from leaving or getting the right medical attention. This is all, of course, by design. The Israelis want this chaos. They want this to happen. They're openly looking at a scheme alongside the United States and monitored by the so-called Civil Military Coordination Center to invent what they call a new Gaza. And so the new Gaza will be the territory that where those remaining will be forced to flee to, and the rest then perhaps can be slowly ethnically cleansed. This is one of the potential outcomes that the Israelis are looking for. They don't want for things to go back to normal in Gaza, and they're not going to allow that to happen. And we can see that if they wanted to allow the aid in, they would. Now, the only difference is, during this pause, is that at CMCC, which is composed of 20 countries and over 40 different international organizations, is overseeing everything the Israelis do on a daily basis, including killing civilians, including demolishing buildings, including preventing the aid. It's all well documented. So this CMCC is complicit in the genocide.
Thousands of demonstrators take to the streets to occupy territories, holding another weekly rally to slam the Israeli Prime Minister's handling of the Gaza war. They're also demanding Benjamin Netanyahu be held accountable for the regime's security failures of October 7, 2023. Now, protesters and Netanyahu continues to blame everyone for what happened back in October of 2023, but is not willing to take any accountability himself. He also called for a professional commission, an inquiry headed by a judge, to probe the regime's failures. They slammed Netanyahu's attempt to choose the members of the commission himself, saying it will give him an unfair advantage and prevent true accountability. They carried signs reading the rule of law, not the rule of Netanyahu, urging the regime's president to refuse to pardon the prime minister. Organizers pledged to keep up their anti-Netanyahu rallies until remains of the last Israeli captive are returned from Gaza. The UN says Israeli forces have forcefully displaced more than 1,000 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of the year. According to UN Deputy Spokesperson Farhan Haq, most of the displaced occurred around Area C, which comprises approximately 60% of the West Bank and is under full Israeli control. He added displacements came after a majority of Palestinian homes were labeled as unauthorized over alleged lack of building permits and demolished. The Palestinian residents argue those construction permits are virtually impossible to get granted and rarely granted by the regime's officials. These remarks come after the UN reported a rise in Israeli military and settler violence across the West Bank. Regime forces killed a Palestinian child Saturday in the town of Silat al-Harithia, west of Jenin. According to local sources, Israeli forces fatally shot 16-year-old before taking his body. And for your West Bank update, we're there joined by Ramallah correspondent Naka Ahmed.
In 2024, 3,070 Palestinians have also been forcibly displaced from Area C. Most of them are from Bedouin clusters and Bedouin communities all over the occupied West Bank. And this is according to Humanitarian Development Statement number 201 by the UN itself, which stated that the Israeli forces and the Israeli regime are pushing Palestinians very hard to leave the places that they have inhabited for tens of years. And another 1,500 Palestinians are under the dire threat of being forcibly displaced. So 2025 was not much of a change than 2024. And this is something that, unfortunately, as many analysts are seeing, 2026 may have also worse numbers, as, of course, the Israeli regime is announcing plans and budgets that are directed towards settlement expansion and towards expelling Palestinians out of the occupied territories in the West Bank, especially Area C, which is considered to be the most strategic areas. Most of the water fountains and the water sources are in Area C. Most of the agricultural areas are in Area C. Most of the industrial zones are also in Area C.
To London now, where British protesters once again gather outside UK Parliament to condemn the Gaza genocide. Demonstrators say exposing crimes committed by Israel in the Holy Land are especially relevant this time of year as the world is getting ready to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, a number of protesters have gathered outside the British Parliament to hold a special Christmas service in honour of all those killed in the Holy Land of Palestine. This vigil seeks to combine prayers for the people of Palestine with outrage at the British government's role in supporting the Israeli regime's genocide against those Palestinians. And attendees particularly want to draw attention to the treatment meted out to both Muslims and Christians by the Jewish extremists inside the Netanyahu administration. The protesters say that Western media and political elites deliberately obfuscate the existence of Palestinian Christians to make it easier to demonize the victims of Israel's genocide and label them as terrorists not worthy of being humanized.
There's been a lot of work done to basically depict Muslims as terrorists. No one talks about Christian terrorists or Jewish terrorists. When they think of that word, they automatically think Muslim. So that's why that framing exists right now. But we know Christians live in Palestine. We've had vicars talk about how their churches are being bombed. We know Israel attacks them.
Members of different religious communities were in attendance to commemorate the victims of the genocide. Jewish pro-Palestinian groups concede that politicians like Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir have deep support amongst the Jewish settlers occupying Palestine, with churches and mosques being destroyed by the Zionist Israeli regime in the birthplace of Jesus and hundreds of thousands of people murdered. It will take serious work to break through the pro-Israel propaganda and make wider Christian populations understand what's taking place in Palestine to those they claim are their brethren. Issa Kadhimi, London.
Iran's foreign minister has told a meeting of special representatives of Afghanistan's neighbors the common future of the region is tied to the future of the South Asian country.
The experience of the past few decades has clearly shown that the security, development, and welfare of Afghanistan are directly tied to the interests of its neighboring countries.
I'd actually call for joint measures against existing challenges and crises, saying they must be addressed through dialogue and active regional participation. He said greater cooperation upgrades common security and stability and limits foreign interference. Al-Ashi noted NATO's military intervention in Afghanistan clearly showed how policies imposed from outside have failed to bring stability and sustainable development to the region. He further called for integration of Afghanistan in regional political and economic processes that help shore up regional security. Now, Tehran is hosting a meeting of Afghanistan's neighbors where representatives from Pakistan, Russia, and China, among others, are present. Now, Iran says the U.S. should be held accountable for its interference in other countries as Washington's meddlesome policies have brought crimes to the region of West Asia. Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei said such U.S. policies led to the loss of millions of lives in the region. The recent acknowledgement by U.S. Special Envoy to the region proves Washington's policies have failed. Baghaei made the remarks during a weekly presser in Tehran. In Venezuela, people have taken to the streets of the state of Miranda to protest a recent seizure of Venezuelan oil tanker by the United States military.
Today, the people of Miranda show through their mobilization all their condemnation and rejection of the piracy of the North American government, which seeks to seize Venezuelan oil and has repeatedly used tricks to undermine the peace of the Venezuelan people. This is how the people of Miranda rise up against piracy.
Waving Venezuelan flag, demonstrators condemned the U.S. seizure of the oil tanker as piracy. They also declared their commitment to defending their homeland and independence. A protester said seizure of the tanker reveals the U.S.'s true intention towards Venezuela. On Wednesday, the U.S. seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela in an operation that Washington justified over sanctions. It is all part of a pressure campaign U.S. has launched against the South American country since September. It's deployed over 15,000 troops, warships, and fighter jets to the Caribbean under the pretext of fighting drug trade. Venezuela, however, says the military buildup is strictly aimed at toppling the Venezuelan government and to gain control of the country's oil resources. At least two students are killed after a gunman opens fire at Brown University in the U.S. state of Rhode Island.
Our focus right now is on supporting the families who have been affected by this, the families of the two students who sadly lost their lives today, as well as the eight, now nine, students who are in the hospital. We've been in touch with their families. I will talk to them soon. But we will come together as a community and we'll get through this.
Nine people were also injured. Officials say six victims are in critical but stable condition, while one is in critical condition. Now, police released surveillance footage showing a man you saw earlier believed to be the suspect. Shooter remains at large and residents have been urged to stay indoors. And more than 400 law enforcement officers are involved in the search. An incident comes amid a surge in gun violence, with more than 70 school shooters reported in America so far this year. Protesters in Washington, D.C. paraded around the White House with what they call the People's Indictment. More than a year after Trump was reelected, demonstrations continue to take place nationwide with no signs of stopping. Rami Mazahari reports.
Coordinated protests against the administration of Donald Trump continue, with activists surrounding the White House to deliver a people's indictment against Trump. From the deployment of National Guard troops in American cities to unprecedented illegal immigration raids to the axing of federal funding of government departments, Trump has inspired some activists to remain in a mode of permanent protest.
I'm 76 years old. Okay, I was able to live in the Vietnam era where Nixon had to leave office, okay? Other countries through mass protests like South Korea, other countries have like massively stood up and nonviolent, very compelling actions to really inspire people and disrupt the workings of what's going on nonviolently. And we can do that.
The protesters say their regular actions are to inspire millions of Americans to return to the nation's capital and nonviolently oust an administration they accuse of being fascist. Economic issues continue to mount in the United States, both structural, like inflation, housing, and healthcare costs, and new, like a Wall Street bust in the artificial intelligence boom. Just 31% approve of Trump's handling of the economy, which is his all-time low and down from 40% as recently as March. Trump's MAGA, or Make America Great Again, base is also showing signs of fracture due to his imperialist attacks on Iran, Gaza, and Venezuela, which contradict his promises to end Washington's foreign meddling and endless wars. Trump's overall approval rating is 36%, which is down from 42% earlier this year, but which is still rather high for a Western head of state. However, his right-wing economic policies target the upper and not the working class, and he appears to be exacerbating rather than healing America's many cultural divides. Rami Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, أو you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Now brothers and sisters, we were covering why it is that it's possible for us to not have ikhlas. Right? We said that Quranic ikhlas is something else. We discovered that it is impossible to have Quranic ikhlas without considering Allah to be azim and kabir. And many believers, like us, were suffering with the idea that Allah is not kabir. Allah is not azim, not practically. Now, just for clarification. Now, the spiritual teachers have taught us about the bare minimum level of ikhlas that we need to have. The bare minimum, so we don't have to consider ourselves munafiqeen and riyad and stuff like the bare minimal amount of ikhlas that we have to have, and that we have and we enjoy, alhamdulillah, is that I do what I'm supposed to do for the sake of Allah. I'm carrying out my duties for the sake of Allah. That level of ikhlas we do have, that's enough, alhamdulillah. Is that the Quranic expectation of ikhlas? No. We have to remind ourselves of where we need to be. What's the Quranic expectation of ikhlas? We studied this verse before. Allah says in the Quran, Surah 6, verse 162, قُلْ, He tells the Prophet, say, إِنَّ صَلَاتِي وَنُسُكِي وَمَحْيَايَ وَمَمَاتِي لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Quranic ikhlas is the ayat of Quran. Say, truly my prayer and the other acts of worship, my life and my death are lillahi rabbil alameen. So that level of ikhlas, that's not there. Okay. What will happen if I settle with being mediocre? Instead of pushing for that Quranic level of ikhlas, what happens to the Muslim who settles? If we do settle, brothers and sisters, there's one scary thing that happens. One of the scary things that happens is this. A person who doesn't have Quranic ikhlas goes through life looking for the results of their actions. And this is very scary. I just did this for Allah. What did I get in return? I did the right thing. I'm looking for the results of my actions. And that is deadly. Especially, let's say somebody satisfies themselves with this kind of level of ikhlas, instead of the ikhlas that we're looking for, where the responsibility becomes important, and they engage in spiritual wayfaring. Of course, spiritual wayfaring is for me to better myself. But if I'm looking for results, that's not what Islam teaches. Let me explain. For a person of ikhlas, my amal and the results are one. What I was trying to do And what I got out of this situation are exactly one. Instead of a person of ikhlas feeling frustrated, the person of ikhlas feels, I got what I was looking for. The person of ikhlas regards Allah as great, Allah as azim. The other results of the action, that's nurun ala nur. If I get God, that's the prize. Let me tell you how Imam Sajjad tells us to think. This is how he addresses Allah. He says, Ya na'imi wa jannati. Oh Allah, you are my na'im. You are my paradise. Ya dunyaya wa akhirati. You are my dunya. You are my akhirah. The person of ikhlas gets God. And that's what I was looking for. I want to give you a practical example. In Islam, brothers and sisters, we are taught to be tolerant, to put up with people. And it's natural. I'm going through life. There's different cultures, different personalities. We're dealing with individuals. People are sensitive about certain things. Islam teaches us a concept called mudara, to be tolerant. To the extent that I'm able to be flexible without compromising what Allah says, Allah's commanded me to do this. Hadith. The hadith says this. Amarani Rabbi, my Lord commanded me, bi mudarat an-nas kama amarani bi ada' al-fara'id. Allah commanded me to be tolerant, to work with people, to be flexible, in the same way that he's commanded me to carry out my wajibat. So my red line in flexibility is I can't cross God's red lines in order to make you happy. But otherwise, I try as hard as humanly possible to be able to be tolerant and thing. Now, if a person has ikhlas, let's say I was tolerant. I was in a situation, somebody else did the wrong thing. I tried to put up with it. I tried to be the better person. I tried to walk a higher path. And the other person didn't do their responsibility. Allah told me to do mudara. I did mudara. The other person didn't do their job. If I'm a person of ikhlas, I got what I was looking for. I got God. I just won. The other person, if they do their job, nurun ala nur. I'm not fixated on the results. I don't get depressed if the results aren't there. If I did what God said, I won. Hadith, and then after that, masail. This hadith is from Imam Sajjad. He says this, من أحب السبيل إلى الله عز وجل جرعتان. Amongst the most beloved paths to God, Allah is my Jannah, Allah is my dunya, Allah is my akhirah. Amongst the most beloved paths to Allah, he says, are two jura, two drinks. Let's call them two bitter drinks. He says, one of them, jura'atu ghaydhin. One of them is a situation that angers the mu'min. The believer is furious with what just happened. But I did my job. I swallowed my anger. The imam says, Yarudduha bihilmin. The believer was halim. They did their responsibility. I got what I was looking for. The other one, wajur'atu musibatin. The other one is a catastrophe, a calamity. I did my job. It didn't fix itself. Yarudduha bisabrin. The person of ikhlas is patient, and then I win by doing what Allah said. We ask that Allah accept what was said and heard in his way. We end with salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir. Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. From Washington, they point out drugs here, drugs there, let's get rid of them, let's stage a coup. Today, we have an American expert on the subject who has completely different data. So buckle up as we start today's Gringo.
Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
We've been talking about this often, of course, and we won the First World War, the Second World War.
Is he a Mexican-American? That is offended by.
A few months ago, I received a video featuring an American living here in Mexico named Jeremy Shepherd. I couldn't believe what I was hearing, not just about drugs, but also about geopolitical issues and coups. He hails from the United States, yet he moved to Mexico for reasons that you will learn about today here on Gringo. This is a man who has a deep understanding of the drug situation in the U.S. and is well aware of the actions taken by various American governments around the globe.
This video depicts a high-ranking Chinese official seeking stability amidst a turbulent situation. Throughout his life, this man has honestly risen to a prominent position. But he now realizes that no matter how high his status, it is not enough to shield his family from the terror that surrounds them. He yearns to take control of his destiny and find a way to save his family and the achievements he has built. As a result, he makes the difficult yet crucial decision to securely reach out to the CIA. This video is produced by the CIA. It serves as a perfect example of how US interference is orchestrated around the globe. It's in Chinese, and its aim is for the Chinese to see it. The goal is to encourage them to join the United States, to betray the Chinese government, to work for the CIA, or at least to spark some doubt about the need for change in their country. It is directed at the people, politicians, and military, and somehow it reaches them. Discussing corruption, terrorism, or drugs to undermine countries from within is always their perfect tool. It is a germ that seeks destabilization, soft coups, military coups, government changes, and alignment with the United States. Coups made in the USA.
And dear friends, it's truly a personal honor and pleasure for me to have the presence of a gringo here in the Gringo studio. A gringo named Jeremy Shepherd. He is a communicator, and I would love for him to introduce himself because he has a very unique story. I'm really glad you came here to the Gringo studio, and I say that from the heart. Once one of my sons told me, "You have to watch this video. You have to watch this video." And eventually, I watched a video from his YouTube channel called Intervenciones Gringas, Gringo Interventions. And I was genuinely impressed. And now our production team has invited him here, and it fills me with joy. How are you? Who are you, if you would like to tell the audience?
Well, I think you've already said everything relevant, even some things more beautifully than I would have said. And from what I've seen in your videos, you know everything.
No, I mean, you have knowledge from what I have seen in your videos about coups, about American interventions around the world, and about drugs. In other words, you are an iconoclast, as they say.
Iconoclast it is.
Yes, you are an iconoclast. This is quite significant in a world where humanity has been establishing ideas and creating internal narratives. It's very challenging for people to inform themselves against their own beliefs.
Yes, what you mentioned about all the coups and so on. Honestly, even after looking into that, I still get surprised by one. I usually hear from around that, for example, in the 1800s, these things were absent, but you know what? I do some research and wow, the more you dig, the more you find. We all know the history that we were taught in school. It shouldn't be shocking that, oh, they did some really terrible things in Vietnam, because you kind of already knew that. But many, even those who lived through the 80s and the dirty wars in Latin America, say, oh, but that was the decade when we had no war, because the news weren't covering it. I mean, in the 70s, the news were there, in the 90s, they presented it like a video game. While they were destroying public infrastructure, things like water purification systems, they would say it was military target.
Blanco Militar.
Well, Jeremy, what happened to you that makes you not a typical American?
Well, I would love to lie and say, no, there are more of us. But you see, the situation in my country is what it is.
There are very few of them indeed.
So it's like, okay, there are indeed many people who didn't go out to vote because they realize that this whole thing we do is like a theater. Ah, this is when you can express your opinions. Do you want Trump or Trump light?
Who decides on coups, overthrows, and interventions in other countries? Is it the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Pentagon, or a combination of all of them?
La CIA, National Security Agency.
Lungas, there's in fact something like naval intelligence. I mean, supposedly the idea behind forming the CIA in the 40s was to bring together all these different departments into one central place. And then it's like, oh, what if we created about 25 new agencies that essentially do the same thing? So honestly, I don't understand why they have a CIA, DIA, when they all basically perform the same tasks, including the dirty work we talk about, which in English is referred to as wet work, right, like dirty jobs. These are almost never the ones that can be identified as, you know, people, they're more like assets, right?
In other words, there are several factors that make the decisions, right? Obviously, it's not just the president alone. He is merely the figurehead placed there, but there are others behind the scenes. Nixon, during his time, initiated this so-called war on drugs, which has proven to be not only a failure, but also misleading, right?
Well, I believe it wasn't a failure. It did exactly what it was designed to do, which is to imprison more people, specifically more African Americans. Because if we look at it in the terms they use, like, oh, we're going to eliminate drugs, while not only was it a failure, but it actually increased the amount of drugs and more porous and cheaper and in more parts of the country and the world, right? But then, okay, how is it possible that with so much money and resources, and after having nearly 50 or 60 years in this war, why do they lose every battle? And it's like, because it was never really about the damn drugs, drugs are just an excuse. I mean, this Lee Atwater, one of the advisors in Reagan's office, I can't remember if he was the secretary of this or that, but he explained it very well, that it has to be this way, basically on purpose.
You said the drugs thing is just an excuse.
Ah yes, specifically he mentioned that, ah yes, we associate marijuana with black individuals, and we associate, or rather, heroin more with them, and marijuana with hippies. And we can arrest them whenever we want and say, ah, they had such and such drug on them, and okay, maybe that's true, maybe not, but all right. But the big question is, like, where do all these drugs come from? Because there isn't, like, a poppy field in the United States, I mean, it just doesn't exist, and there aren't coca leaves in the mountains of Denver, you know? Everything has to come from really far away, and it's like, and the hippies, and I mean, back in that time, right? Like, ah, like jazz musicians, and so on, because it was the 40s, they were importing these things in quantities. I mean, enough to supply so many cities. I mean, for all the addicts you see in the United States, you think, okay, and how many drugs does that person consume? The amount is reported as way bigger. So you shouldn't be surprised when you hear stories. They were bringing in planes, like, tons per week, and you say, tons. And you hear, yes, that's how much the demand is.
Porque hay la demanda este en...
Well, right now, with Venezuela, the cartel of the Suns, unlike Colombia, there it is. The president is accused anyway. I'm not saying there aren't situations in those countries. That's true. But in the end, the point is that the excuse was very clear. I mean, what is it?
You should never label him as a drug trafficker because, well, he's my friend, so he can't be bad, right? I mean, this standard applies because Venezuela in 94, before Chavez, was a very different country back then, right? There was a general who got arrested for carrying drugs in a suitcase, right? A briefcase, that's what they say. And then they said, oh, we had to let him go because it was politically sensitive. Why? Because he's your friend. On the other hand, if this poor guy has no influence, not a friend, then you simply throw him in jail. This is a clear example. I mean, this is how they did it with Garcia Luna, right? And I know this is a case from a while ago. So as you see, corruption has reached a very high level in Mexico, but then how do the drug traffickers bring it to all these cities? And so on in such large quantities, I mean, they never stop them, like, they never stop the trucks that bring 8 tons of cocaine.
I have always said in my discussions that in the game of drug trafficking, much like in chess, we shouldn't focus on pawns, knights, rooks, queens, kings, or bishops. Instead, we should pay attention to those who are moving the chess pieces. Here I feel a need to mention that Jeremy, as he has allowed me to address this topic since he has spoken about it publicly, had a near-death experience with drug use. After leaving the United States, you came to Mexico for rehabilitation. Is that correct? Well, based on that experience you went through, what can you share with the audience who are always pointing fingers, saying, we need to check it ourselves, we should test it? When there are many people in political power who even consume cocaine and such.
Yeah, that's quite noticeable.
Yeah, noticeable.
From miles away, right? Well, actually, this is like a joke, because I talk about that. I mean, I always believe that my personal life is the least interesting thing my channel can discuss. So if I include it in something like this, it's like, in the end, quick, and so on.
But you have an experience. You embodied an experience, and that's what you share.
You've watched the video all the way to the end, while many others don't. Then, as you mentioned, yes, I was addicted to heroin 6 years ago, right? And people are like, oh, really? Then someone in the chat says, what, go home, you never finished the video. It's just that I didn't want to start with that. I wanted to begin with, look, this is the story of why I started researching it, because I was genuinely curious about why there's so much of that drug in my country, especially when we're there in places like Vietnam and Afghanistan. Well, we were actually in these places for help, well, Kuomintang, like the nationalist Chinese who were in exile in what is now Myanmar or another place. I mean, what's going on? Suddenly, so much heroin is coming from high poverty to the United States. It's like, there seems to be a pattern, doesn't it? So we have officially ended the war in Afghanistan. Or rather, it lasted 20 years and now they're out. I honestly thought it would take more than just 24 hours. But no, it feels like it should be some sort of record for the Guinness Book, right? But after that, it was like, oh, now we have synthetic opioids, which are the new trend. A lot of people are importing fentanyl and other substances from various places. And when they want to place blame, they point fingers at Mexico or China. It's like, yes, it seems to come from multiple sources, but the customers are always you, right? And at what point do you stop pointing fingers and say, oh, you are a bad person for selling drugs?
Do you think Donald Trump is going to invade Mexico?
Honestly, I hope not, because I live here. I mean, this is where all my belongings are. But I don't think so. I mean, the truth is, yes, the United States has come to Mexico for quite a while, like 3 major attempts, and 2 of them were complete failures. Yet they declared victory afterward, like a victory in the mission to capture Pancho Villa, even though they didn't catch him. It was a victory, that's how they teach us, but in fact, it sounds like they didn't catch him.
So why all this theatrics? Why all this drama? Well, for me, you know that it has taken a lot of reading and hard work to get to this understanding. But you have an experience within the United States. For instance, right now, the excuse about Venezuelan oil, the situation with Mexico, the control of what migration. In other words, that narrative about drugs and the bad guys is used, and many people believe it.
It was mucho más grande negocio que cualquier droga.
Oil is a much bigger business than any drug, and they really want to have control on it. For instance, the oil in Venezuela has a lot of sulfur and so on. They refer to it as heavy oil instead of sweet oil, which comes out more refined. They say, oh yes, we have the technology to refine that, but we won't build a refinery for it here. Instead, we'll take it to our refinery in California, where all the technology is our property. So you have to sign something stating that you won't disclose to anyone, like an engineer, what you saw here. So it's like, okay, this is the same old neocolonialism where raw materials are extracted and then, finished products are imported, right? But in this situation, your entire economy relies on that, and if you can't refine it, it becomes worth significantly less. I mean, you can still sell it. Let's say sanctions are imposed on countries that buy from you, but you can at least try to sell it, although you'll have to accept just 10% of the price. It's like having basically a button you can press to. What Nixon and Kissinger said about Chile was to make the economy scream, you know? And this was the note they wrote, right? Like, this is important. I mean, in 2019, we saw an example of this. Like, I can't even describe it as an attempted coup, right? Because that attempt was so sad.
However, your personal experience with drugs inspired you to comprehend everything you later share in your videos about the struggles and interventions. Here in Mexico, we have a National Museum of Interventions in Churubusco. Have you been there?
Well, yes, it's been around 9 years.
So why did you decide to come to Mexico?
I hadn't actually decided to move to Mexico, but I felt the need to leave the country. So I started looking for jobs here, as well as in a few other Latin American countries and some in Asia. Mexico reached out to me first, and I thought, okay, I'll go to Mexico. It will be temporary. Maybe I'll spend 6 months there and then move on to another country or who knows what. That was 10 years ago, and I came here and just stayed.
And here you are. How do you see Mexico at this moment? How?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the truth is, living in Querétaro is a bit different because, you know, I just came back today. I used to live here in Mexico City before, and coming back feels completely different, right? And I think we often get stuck in a bubble, like when you live in the capital and you surround yourself with other people who might have more.
But did you feel better, humanly speaking, here in Mexico?
Oh, yes.
You're not the only one. Look, there's a book that I can't quite remember the author of right now. I mean, the book is called Twilight of the American Culture.
I think I've seen the title before, but I can't remember the author.
Norman, I think, maybe not. Anyway, he said, I'm leaving the United States, and he came to Mexico, and here in Mexico he underwent surgery and says, I found the solidarity that couldn't find back there. Not even my neighbors greeted me. In other words, there are many Americans who have come here in search of the soul, the lost spirit, because over there everything is about money, money, cash, cash, drugs, drugs, everywhere, right?
Yes, the truth is, and it's in useful ways that if you grow up there, live there, you don't realize that, hey, we're the only country that does this. And I mean, what has always struck me as funny is when we give money to others like Ukraine or Israel to support all the things their regimes have to pay for. And one of those is socialized health insurance, so that everyone can see a doctor, even if they don't have money. And yet, we can pay for that in other countries for the people there, but we can't do it for ourselves. It's like, why don't we have that? Why don't we have guaranteed maternity leave? Why not? And it's like other countries then say, this is the freest and most civilized country, while all the others are like, you know, putting shoes on a dog, saying, oh, we're superior, and so on, right?
We could chat with you for a long time, no doubt about it, but look, our program time has already run out. Is there something you would like to share regarding this topic and the interventions of Americans from the United States? Surely you know a lot about it.
You can never send an army of just Americans without any local collaborators and expect to do things your way. For instance, we saw 500,000 people in Vietnam, yet it didn't change the Vietnamese government. In the end, they were overthrown, but take Guatemala as an example, a smaller country where only about 400 people were sent from the United States. The rest were individuals with significant ambitions in the military, people who owned a lot of property and didn't want to lose their money. These were the people in the country who said, yes, we will help you eliminate this government.
And it's not like we should tell everyone in Latin America, hey, don't be like that. But if you never cooperate with the empire, it's not that they'll never invade you, they'll never occupy you. However, they do lose. But when someone from the country, along with many outsiders, decides to cooperate with them, believing they have our interests at heart, that's when things really go wrong, right? So, I don't know, don't trust the United States.
Well, I encourage the audience to follow you on your channel. It's truly worth it. I mean, it's not just worth it, it's definitely worth watching. Do you do it all by yourself, or do you have a team?
It's just me. That was part of the experience when I started with TikTok. And honestly, you can just create on your phone, right? With YouTube, I thought, this is going to be my chance to learn video editing and all that, which is why some of my early videos are quite experimental and artistic, like the edits and everything.
The one about drugs is super well edited.
Well, yes, it's kind of you. I mean, by the time I got this out, I had already taken this out of my system, like, what do I want to do or not?
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Jeremy. Occasions like this, after listening to our guest, encourage us to reflect on ourselves, challenging the narrative we have been building or that was instilled in us by schools, television, and perhaps even our own parents through the colonization of our minds. In this instance, it's been a great pleasure to have had this guest who clarifies the truth about the issue of drugs and the American interventions in various parts of the world, which are so far removed from the image of democracy, respect for human rights, and adherence to the law that many people hold regarding the different governments of the United States. This isn't about tearing down. It's about building a better world together. I invite you all to join me for the next episode of Gringo.
Of my life, does everything with a smile. She's my mother, my sweet mother. She can take the pain away with just one look. That's my mother, my sweet mother. You're the picture in the frame with all the colors of the rainbow. I'm far from ashamed to say I love you so. And here I lay at home tonight. It's late, but I can't sleep tonight. Forgive me if I take my time, but I just have to let you know you're so special. She taught me how to pray. We play games every day with my mother, my sweet mother. Even if I made no sense, listen with patience, that's my mother, my sweet mother. She would sing a sweet song till I shut my eyes and kiss my head and say goodnight. And I feel safe with you by my side. You're there for every step in my life. I'm sorry. If only this was true. I'm in a cold, dark, wet room. I was an orphan, and now I'm 22. I've never known my mom. A picture faded by the sun is all I have. I'm left alone with nothing more but what I am. It's not enough. This life is tough when there's no. My
sweet mother.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 27th, 2017 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the participants of the 34th International Quran Competitions. What is the main problem of the Islamic Ummah today? The main problem is the domination of Western culture over the Islamic Ummah. The main problem is the domination of the Western economy and Western politics over the Islamic Ummah. These are the main problems. Today, there is no sign of Islamic identity in many Islamic countries. Of course, the people in such countries are Muslims. They say daily prayers, they fast, and they probably pay zakat. But society as a whole is lacking in Islamic identity. In other words, there is not a personality or a reality that confronts the reality of evil and kufr. That is why Westerners interfere. They interfere in their culture, in their belief, in their economy, and in their social relationships, and they control their politics. The result is that because of lack of a single identity inside Islamic societies, there is fighting, war, hatred, and lack of understanding. This is what happens. Today, the world of evil is after destroying and annihilating this identity. They want to destroy everything that has remained from this identity in every part of the world. This is an Islamic principle. Whoever rejects evil and believes in Allah has grasped the most trustworthy handhold that never breaks, and Allah hears and knows all things.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ إِسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى لَا انْفِصَامَ لَهَا وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. This is a truth. If we understand this truth correctly, we are committed to it. If we pursue it, and if we turn it into a public reality in the Islamic community and the Islamic Ummah, notice what a great transformation will take place. Notice what a great transformation this single truth, and there are hundreds of such truths in the Quran, will bring about in the world. If we understand, believe in, and promote this very issue and concept, notice what will happen. The Quran should be understood. We are very distant from the Quran. The enemy is taking advantage of our distance from the Quran. The enemy is injecting in us lack of faith, decadence, and dependence on himself on a daily basis.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
From Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, a heartfelt greeting to all our dear listeners. We are ready to bring you another day of thoughtful programming, rich conversations, and insightful content. It's Monday, and we've got a lineup designed to inspire, inform, and accompany you through the day. So, wherever you are, make yourself comfortable. There is so much ahead. Well, to begin our broadcast, we present today's special. This is a special daily program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. This program makes extensive use of various items such as Quranic verses, prayers, nasheeds, and reports. That would be a truly unique opening to our week indeed. Following that, please join us for Hadith of the Day, where timeless wisdom unfolds. Sheikh Muhammad Jafar Danish presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, every day along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. In this program, hadith relating to a particular lunar calendar date or a scholar calendar date or solar calendar date are presented. Next in our lineup, we'll delve into Israel Watch. The Zionist media has always tried its best to reflect world events in a way that suits them and to influence the entire world. The aim of this program is to examine the reports and analysis of the Zionists and their views on current events and issues in West Asia region. In each program, an expert appears in person at the studio in Beirut and has an interesting conversation with the host of the program, seriously criticizing the views of the Zionist media. For those seeking a deeper connection with the Holy